Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to a Land Jam Short. The speed timer lives.
Yeah, this was a surprising release from, I think, about a week ago, Sanj. The SRQ 047 and 049, the black and white speed timer releases. They're kind of a big deal on the internet. I'm sure you noticed.
Yeah. So to listeners out there, I mean, Seiko has their speed timer line in their main line for the past few years, right? But that was not a mechanical speed timer.
No, that's not true. They did have a mechanical speed timer, but it was more... so they had a couple releases, right? So for their 50th anniversary, they had the SRQ 029, which was the Panda release a couple of years ago. I think it was like 2019 it came out.
Yeah, then, I think you're right. I think you may have even covered that.
We did. Yeah. And then they've had basically Tokyo Olympics chronographs. Like they're like really round case design with like
a very stopwatch looking one.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So that was also in the speed timer line. Then they had a bunch of solar chronographs that are also.
Right. The solar chronographs is what I was referring to. Right.
Right.
So, and those were priced quite nicely for what you were getting.
Yeah, I mean, it was a quartz chronograph, so you know it was under a G. It was like $500-$600. But this obviously is interesting because it's an automatic chronograph, right? So this is the bread and butter. This is, you know, kind of the high end of the speed timer, I guess, menu. You know, amongst the options you could get with the quartz chronographs in the bottom, and you know these bad boys kind of closer to the top. So, you know, just to give the rundown, these are chronographs going back to the 6138 line. You and I, well, I am a fan of the 6138 and 39. I've got one of each. And so this specifically is the 6138 8001, the baby panda. So not the, I think it's the 8020, Sanj, which is the panda that we all talk about.
Yeah, but this one is the 8001, right?
8001, which is the reverse panda, and 8020, which is the panda dial. You know, these are the later ones. This is the 1972 baby panda releases that Seiko did.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, obviously back then, that movement, the 6138 movement, you had a vertical layout. So you had basically chronograph subdials in 6 and 12. You know, this release is basically three subdials, so it's a little bit different, but at the same time, you know, they're clearly trying to harken back to it, right? So two releases. The 047 is the panda. It's got the black subdials. 049 is a reverse panda, the white subdials. That's a limited edition. They're only making 1,000 of those, and they're throwing in like a leather strap as well. And one thing you should notice that Fratello picked up on is the orange tipped seconds hand for the chronograph hands.
Yes. Yes. Right?
That is harkening back to the 1972 Seikos. So that's just a little detail to kind of catch you in.
Even the subdials, like the one at the 9 o'clock, for example, is also orange tipped, it looks like.
Yeah. Those are chronograph. Those are the ones, the running seconds hand is not orange tipped.
So, got it.
It's quite smart. And, you know, you've got the date window, the round date window at 4:30, which is done pretty subtly. Actually, one of the reviewers, actually, let me ask you this, Sanj. So of the two, actually, let's finish, right? So case size, 42 millimeters. The height is a little bit controversial, okay? This is 14.6 millimeters thick.
That's not too bad. I mean, still thinner than my Fortis.
Yeah, well, you know, for the average or the normal people out there, that's obscenely thick. for the people who like actually aren't used to a pocky puck, that's pretty thick. And actually, you know, this was the problem with the SRQ 029 as well. it was the thickness. A lot of people complained that it just sat a little too high on the wrist. So that's kind of, I think, the real problem here is how's it fit, you know? Inside, obviously, you know, Seiko spared no expense, 8R48 automatic caliber, movement inside, 28,800 vibrations per hour frequency, you know, vertical clutch, column wheel. So this is a very, very capable automatic chronograph movement. It has a power reserve 45 hours. Accuracy, you know, plus 25, minus 15 is what Fratello, you know, basically expects here, which is fine. I mean, nothing to write home about. But being a chronograph, only 100 meters water resistance. But, you know, that is the whole package. The LE is the black dial. To me, that's my pick, Sanj. I don't know. Which of the two speaks to you more than anything else?
The LE. The LE. Yeah.
And I think the reason is, one, I think the black dial looks really stark. And also, two, because the chaptering on the outside, right, the tachymeter scale is in black. Then you have an inner white scale, and then the 60 minutes, I guess, or 60 second scale. And then on the inside of that is the black dial. So it makes the whole watch look a bit smaller.
Right? Yeah, it's this, like, the interplay of the black and the white chapter rings, exactly. Right? With the dial.
It just makes it stand out a bit more. Just has the black tachymeter and everything else is white. So it looks a little bit bigger, even though technically they're the same size. There's no difference. But visually, it looks a little bit different. So yeah, I like the black one a lot. And
yeah, like the black one, the LE, kind of like with the interplay of the chapter ring, black and white, and the markings that go along with it, kind of gives it a little bit of a flavor of, let's say, a Breitling Navitimer style. You know, makes it look a bit more technical in that sense.
Yes.
Even though both watches have the same sort of identification and markings and things like that.
Yeah, it's just, I agree.
It's just the interplay of it. But, I mean, both the watches are attractive. And you can't go wrong.
So, I mean, one guy online was saying, actually, he had a bugaboo with the black dial. So if you look at the black dial, right, and you look at the black, so the black dial is not actually black. It's like a kind of like a matte black, or like a,
oh, like I
charcoal,
see.
Right?
Yeah.
And his complaint was the actual date window was black. So when he had it in person, and I'm, you know, the pictures in Fratello are great, but they're not really the same as having it, you know, wearing it on your wrist. He was saying he saw basically two gradients of black, which drove him a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I have to see it
in the pictures, you know.
I can kind of see it in the pictures, the two shades of black.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't, but if you can, you can. But yeah, so, you know, for him, that was like a huge problem. I don't think it bothers me that much, to be honest.
Well, that person could buy the other one then.
Yeah. I mean, that review was also saying that it wore a little too tall for him. And that was basically the common problem with the SRQ 029, which was the previous Panda release. So I really don't know what the deal is with Seiko releasing these really tall automatic chronographs. I feel like they really should be able to slim that down. Even a couple millimeters would make a world of difference.
Definitely. I mean, it's probably to do with the packaging of the chronograph, right? The whole module. Maybe it's not really optimized as, say, some of the other watches.
Perhaps. Hard to say. I mean, you're getting basically a Seiko Prospects release, but at the same time, you know, you're getting basically, you know, a very high-end movement, right? And you're also getting body work, you know, the polishing that you would expect at Grand Seiko. So you're getting, you know, almost a Grand Seiko level watch for, call it $3,000 roughly, right? It's 2,700 euros for the 047, the non-limited, and 2,900 for the limited. You know, call it about $3,000. So, you know, I think it's a very compelling release. You know, you're getting a taste of Grand Seiko at another level, at a much cheaper price point. I don't think there's any Grand Seiko that you or I would want that's, you know, that inexpensive.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a very interesting value proposition. What are your thoughts, Sench?
I think it's a very nice looking watch. The price point doesn't really, let's say, I think it's fine. I think it's, for what you're getting, it's a fine watch. There's only probably a few things that kind of, I would say, like, ask Seiko to think a bit more about if I had a chance to do that. First of all, it's labeled as a Seiko Prospects.
Yes.
And typically Seiko Prospects, you don't have too many watches that are in this price point. Maybe what the, is it the Marine Masters? The highly Marine, capable dive watches?
Yes, they are about $2,000 or $3,000. I mean, Prospects is their professional specification. So
it is. It's just that, like, generally, like, their main Prospects line is what? Maybe $1,000 to $1,500 most, right?
No, I think, I mean, I think technically your Samurai is a Prospects. I think the Seiko Turtle
Samurai is a Prospects. I mean, I'm talking about, like, say, the Max, typically. Most of the more popular Seiko Prospects, and, you know, will probably be in the, what, the few $100 ranges, right? Under $1,000, or let's just say close to $1,000.
I think they're on the gamut, right? Because, like, you can have basically a Turtle that's like $300, $400, whatever bucks, and then you can also run it up to a Marine Master 300, which is, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. So
it's just what I was coming down to is, like, should it have been packaged as a Presage?
No, Presage isn't, that's not their sport line, right? So
it isn't.
It wouldn't fit there. It wouldn't fit there. If you put it to Grand Seiko, it would be too cheap to be Grand Seiko, right?
Yeah, to me, it's like, is it really pushing the limits of Prospects itself?
I mean, if anything, Prospects is too wide, right? It includes
a $1,000 watch. That's the thing.
It also includes a $4,000 Marine Master, but I don't think it should sit anywhere but Prospects. I you know, it's just not. Because, you know, there are Grand Seiko chronographs, right? So, like, if you want to spend $8,000 to $10,000, you can do that. But that's not what this is, you know. So I think for what you're getting an automatic movement, you know, vertical clutch. You're getting all the bells and
whistles. No, and that's fine.
I think it's just very impressive for that price, you know.
It's this placing the product. Like, are we, you know, is this kind of like getting to the point where, like, Volkswagen is making the Phaeton again, you know?
I see what you're saying, but you know what, Seiko as a whole is increasing prices across the board,
yeah
so that's really not really a problem for them. Like, that's what they want. So you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, that's part of the game, baby.
The only other thing I guess I really have maybe a bone to pick with is the movement, the power reserve. 45 hours is fine, but you know, you have now movements getting up to 80. Like, would it make sense to
are they chronograph movements?
That's a good question, but you should see. I'm not sure if they even have like movements into the 60 hour power reserve, right? The chronograph movements. I have to check.
I'm not sure. I don't know if that is that necessarily off. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a different kettle of fish, you know, versus, and look, you know, there's a couple of things you can do, right? Like, I think what Hamilton or ETA does for their what is it, H80, Sench, the 80 hour one,
right?
Is that
a Powermatic 80, right?
Powermatic 80, or I think a portion of that is basically turning down the beats per hour, right, to extend your power reserve. But, like, if you do that, you know, it also raises other issues with accuracy and durability.
Yeah, I mean, for example, like the Hamilton Intramatic, the one that you and I like, that has 60 hours power reserve, chronograph. But, you know, one can argue, okay, you know what, it's a two sub-dial bi-compacts kind of looking watch versus Seiko, which has an additional sub-dial that it needs to run. So, but it would be nice to get a little bit more power reserve.
Yeah, I don't care about this. I feel like 45 is plenty.
But you have an extensive watch rotation now, Tommy.
That's true. So I would ideally need like something that would last like a week plus.
Yes, you need a 600 hour power reserve.
I mean, The way I kind of rotate, I mean, I don't know how about you, but like basically the Tudor Black Bay GMT is the default watch. And it survives, you know, if I wear something else for a day or two, it's still ticking by the time I go back to it. So that's kind of how things operate here. I don't know about you. Do you have a default? What is your default?
Lately it's been, which is going to be a new watch alert? Is that what we call it nowadays?
I think you can tell the people. I think
So
if you follow the Instagram, you know, right?
Exactly. I picked up recently a Zodiac, what is it called? GMT Pro Diver.
The black LHD.
The black. Yes.
Left-hand drive. Yeah.
Exactly. So I picked that up. I decided to jump in and get it because I just like the watch too much. And lately, I've been wearing that quite often.
Comfortable, comfortable wear. No issues.
No issue. I mean, there's one gripe I have to pick. It's with the buckle on the strap that comes with.
Interesting. Okay.
But overall, I'm really happy with the watch. The lume is fantastic. This thing, like, you give it 10 seconds of light, it can light up another room.
And you were in Spain, right? So that made the trip for your grand.
Yeah, vacation. Yeah. I basically wore it the whole week.
Did you bring anything else on your trip?
I did. I brought the 007, the Seiko.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Only because I was hearing, you know, before the trip from everybody that, you know, Spain in very populated areas, you know, in tourist traps, essentially, is like known for pickpockets.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, you know what? Let me try just having one spare watch and see where it goes.
Well, you know what you should have done, right? You should have worn the Portis.
Why?
The guy robbing you would break his arm, you know?
He's using the jackhammer to break open the clasp.
He'd need a forklift to get it off you. So, you know, I don't think it should be a problem.
But anyways, long story short, I really didn't wear the Seiko. I really didn't see any pickpocketing happening at all.
Well,
there'd be
bad pickpockets if you could spot them. But yes, go on.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't see much of that. And it was a very enjoyable trip, very beautiful country.
Good to have
had
you
a
back.
Great time.
Good to have
and
you.
For the most part, I wore the Zodiac.
Nice, nice. And I feel like, did you set it to North American time zone? Did you actually track two time zones or?
I did. I set the, once I got to Spain, I set the local time and I used the GMT hand to track the Eastern time zone.
Is this a caller or flyer GMT?
Good question. So I could.
Do you set the GMT hand or the local minute hand?
I can do both.
That's not an answer.
I think it might be, you know what? It might be the latter, the flyer.
Okay, that's a true GMT. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
But you know what? I enjoy wearing the watch, regardless of what kind of GMT it is. And it wears smaller than it is, so.
That's interesting because both of us are chronograph guys. I mean, I know I am, but I my default watch is a GMT. It's just, I don't know. It's interesting, you know.
I think it's just the lack of like the more simplistic aesthetic of a GMT versus a chronograph.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. Even though I'm definitely more of a chronograph guy.
Same. I mean, my other go-to watch would have been the Fortis, but I just decided not to take that because it would have exceeded the baggage limit.
Right, exactly. You have to buy an extra seat on the plane. So
exactly. Yeah. Actually, I have to put it into like a freighter, you know, to ship it.
It's like the microwave machine from Batman Begins, you know, it needs to be on a freighter.
Yeah, exactly. The micro emitter.
That's right. So
but yeah, going back to the Seiko, it is like I was saying, the Seiko is 14.6 millimeters thick. Which is on the thicker side, I would say. But
that is thick. Yeah, that is thick.
I mean, for comparisons, the Fortis is 15.5.
That's absurd. Yeah.
I mean, it's meant to be in space.
It's absurd. I mean, the Speedmaster, I think, don't quote me, I think it's like 12 millimeters. But yeah, that's a mechanical manual chronograph, so you don't have the rotor and everything. But still, like that, you know.
They didn't use the Speedmaster to hammer rivets. They used the Fortis. Yeah.
If you need a hammer, use a hammer. Okay.
Well, what if the hammer drifted away? What do you have? What do you have?
Fair enough. So the
moment SRB you look at the Speedmaster, the crystal pops off. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah. So.
But anyways, what I was coming down to regarding the thickness is that, okay, it does feel, it does tend towards the thicker side, but when you wear it, it might be feeling a little bit slimmer. Some watches have that ability.
Yeah, I think we should try it. I think the lugs will help. I don't think there's a lot to be done about how high it sits on the wrist. So if you
like the Zin 144, it looks thinner than it actually is.
Yeah, the Zin wears thinner too, though. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't have huge wrists, neither do you. So I would think a watch like this may be a problem. So I would.
Yeah, I mean, the Zin, I think the 144 is like 14.2 millimeters thick. Is that which right? Is not that. Yeah, it's a thick watch. It just looks slim is because of the case design.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely things you can do to make it. You know, wear thinner on the wrist, but I'm not sure Seiko did it. You know, I think that's what it is. Yeah, no, you're right. The Zin 144, it's 14.5 millimeters thick. Yeah, I mean, I was literally wearing mine the other day, and it didn't feel thick at all. But yeah, you know, this is the complaint amongst some reviewers I've read, and I don't want to drop a lot of names, but. So, you know, wear it first and then decide for yourself, you know, that's all I got to
say. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, whoever makes this purchase, any watch purchase is because they like the watch, the way it looks first. Right. And then they'll see what the features of the watch are, and then they'll eventually buy it.
I know.
The other thing I actually liked is the bracelet. It's like staying true to the 6138. The 8001. And it looks very a little bit on the jingly jangly side. If this
my words picture. Are losing me. The originals were jingly jangly. Obviously, this is going to be high end. But it's got that double row of, I guess, polished
rice beads.
Kind of rice beads. Yeah.
But like, there's a picture on Fratello where the watch is on its side. The panda. And you can see that the bracelet is not too stiff.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I think that's impressive. I think this is another case of Seiko kind of stepping it up. You know, the bracelet, for example, you know, they could have gone kind of off the shelf, but they didn't.
I wonder if that also adds to the price too. But you know, they probably wanted to stay faithful to the classic recreation. So that's what they decided to do.
I mean, I got to give them credit. I mean, for under about $3,000 to produce a watch like this, that's really impressive. I don't see, forget Omega. I don't see Breitling or anybody producing an automatic chronograph at this price point, you know, to this kind of caliber. So it's impressive. That's something that Seiko can do that a lot of people can't do. So big thumbs up. Black dial for me, Sanj. What's yours? What's your pick?
The black dial for sure.
Black dial. You gotta go black. This has actually reignited my interest in the original 6138 8001. So
oh no, don't tell me you're looking for one.
You know, there's always eBay alerts, you know, you always got an eye open.
eBay alerts. Sometimes I think you're running like 6 monitors.
Yeah,
on eBay
I'm like a day trader. You know, I've got those 6 curved monitors looking at old Seikos.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes that's what you do.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's
my. And then you send me one of them, and I say no.
Yeah. How useful are you? But hey, good for you. You bought a watch this year. It's been a couple of years. Okay.
It's been a few years. I do agree with that.
It's been a kind of embarrassing to call yourself a watch collector and no watch purchases. How does that? Useless.
Useless. Yes. Good. Yes. I'm useless in not spending my own money.
That's right. Useless. oh, by the way, before we go to Streaming Gold, I wanted to do a friendly mention. I'm not sure we're going to actually cover it. That Longines Hodinkee LE that came out.
What did you think? Yes. I think it's a well-executed project by Hodinkee and Longines. I think they Hodinkee seems to have a knack of making these special edition watches.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they do a couple a year, so sure. This is specifically the Longines Spirit Zulu Time. This is the Longines Zulu Time GMT, but this is the Hodinkee LE. They're selling it for $3,800. I think it has a titanium case, Sanj.
Yes, so I think you're right.
And for people who haven't seen it yet, it's basically like a steel bezel take on the Zulu Time. So it kind of, to me, looks like a Black Bay Pro, right?
It does, but with numerals.
Yeah, or you because of that yellow tipped hand, right? Or, you know, basically in a way, you know, a derivative of a Rolex Explorer 2, because the Black Bay Pro was a derivative of the Rolex Explorer 2. So it's interesting. I'm not sure if it's enough to get people that crazy excited about it, but I like it. I like the design a lot. You know, I've got nothing but good things to say about it.
Yeah, and I, like I said, you know, Hodinkee seems to have a knack of finding, giving an existing product line a bit of what the, let's say, the watch fans want. You know, a steel bezel Zulu Time, I think just really goes really well versus the classic. What is it? Did they use a ceramic?
I think the regular Zulu Times, I mean, let me just pull one up so I'm not conjuring it. Because I've had my eye on these. Yeah, I mean, they're like more straightforward blue, black bezel, you know, green bezel. Nothing wrong with it. I like the design a lot. But I do think that the steel gives it a bit of a flair, you know. So,
well, yeah, steel.
We
or
covered
is it,
this, think, right, Sanj? The Zulu Time? I think we did.
We probably did,
knowing us. Yeah, no, I think it's cool.
The other thing is, I think it's they dropped the size. I don't know what the original Zulu Time case size is. I'm just looking it up. It's 42. They dropped it down to 39.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference, right? That makes a huge difference. And this reminds me of the Hodinkee LE with the Aura 65. They had a mechanical Aura Diver 65, which is also, I think, slimmed down a bit, which was awesome, you know, and they get it. So, yeah. You know, is this the Zulu Time you should get? I don't know. Maybe it is, you know, just like
I've seen the Zulu Time visually. It looks pretty big of a watch.
Really?
I think it looks bigger than 42, just the way it's put together.
Interesting. Yeah, it does look a bit flat, you know, versus
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've not actually handled one. You know, who knows? But I think the 39 millimeters is a coup. That's it. That's the biggest deal, more than I think anything else design wise. It's just getting it smaller makes a big difference.
Right. And the bezel will probably push it to 40 because of the ridges at the around the bezel. It's typically these things typically stick out a little bit more than the case.
Right. But right. I mean, you know, the direct competitor to this watch is the Tudor Black Bay GMT. Like, it's the same price point, more or less. It's kind of the same part of the market. It's functionally, you know, similar.
Black Bay GMT or the Black Bay Pro, you think?
Black Bay Pro, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, both of those kind of, you know, as far as the cost, you know, like where you are placing yourself in the market, yes, I think visually it looks a lot like the Black Bay Pro, but, you know, you'd be going head to head against those watches. And I,
right.
I think it's interesting. Yeah,
it is. And the bezel can move around. So I guess yeah. It is more aligned with the Black Bay GMT.
Yeah, no, I'm talking just Zulu Time in general, not even the Hodinkee LE, like just the model, you know.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, interesting. I liked it. I'm a fan of the Hodinkee LEs. I've got the Hamilton, the Fab 4 release from last year. Love it.
That should be a 60-hour power reserve.
It is. Yeah, it is. That's a long one. Like, I put it down after a day and it's still taking like well into the next day. So yeah,
that was an excellent watch purchase.
That was good, and it was a good price too. I'm not sorry about that one. I'm pretty good. So very good, Sanch. Last topic of today for our short is a streaming gold pick. It's called The Railway Men on Netflix. I know you don't have Netflix, but this is something maybe you should consider to watch, Sanch.
Just give me a password. I'm in, baby.
This is actually like an Indian version of Chernobyl. In 1984, in central India, there was a big gas leak, a chemical gas leak at a place called Bhopal. The gas leak killed thousands of people, some of them in their sleep. And the stories about these guys that work at the Indian railways who work really hard to save as many people and provide relief and like get people out of the city, away from basically inhaling this fatal gas. It's very good. And it's actually in large part based on a true story. Highly recommend it if you're into like, you know, Chernobyl the other show on Fukushima Daiichi
right.
A couple months ago. Yeah. Same vein, you know, like a huge disaster has happened and some guys step up to kind of turn the tide. So it's called The Railway Men. If you don't like subtitles, I don't blame you. There's an English dub, which is pretty good. Just go for it. It's only 4 episodes. It's really good. So that's my recommendation. That's my offering.
Excellent.
All right. All right, Sanch. Well, you know, we've got a bunch of things lined up before the end of the year. We're going to do a whole new full episode, hopefully in a couple of days. And Sanch, we're looking forward to that review of the Zodiac also before the end.
Yeah,
of the
we year. Can totally make that short for the fans.
We are on the record now, Sanch. Okay. This is going out to the world. So we have to do it. All right.
The world that everyone tunes in every time we launch a podcast.
Right. I'm talking to you. All right. All right. until next time. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Land Jam Podcast. Like and subscribe. Review us on iTunes. That really helps us out. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram. All right. Until next time. Thank you. End recording soon.